We've called to order this meeting of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. The pledge is being completed. I'm going to turn to staff and see if we can get a roll call.
Will do. Okay, Chairperson Lopez.
Present.
Vice Chair Kozmicki.
Here.
Director Carbone.
Here.
Director Perez.
Absent.
Director Friend. Director Labar. Director Asonio. Director Eskew. Director Adams. Director Hernandez. Director Brown.
Here.
Alternate Director Alejo.
Present.
You have quorum, sir.
Quorum being confirmed, we're going to proceed to public comment. This is an opportunity for the public to share comments regarding items not on today's agenda. We invite the public to use the raise hand function via Zoom or come forward to the dais and room to make comment. We'll have 2 minutes per speaker.
No one online with raised hands, nothing received, and no one in the audience here.
With that, we'll close public comment and proceed forward to reports by committee chairs on committee meetings, beginning with budget, personnel, and nominating.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. The budget, personnel, and nominating committee did not meet today.
Any comments from members of the board on that? Any from the public? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go to the advisory committee.
The advisory committee did not meet this month.
Public comment on that? Hearing none. Proceed forward. So now we have comments and referrals from chair and board members, which I don't believe we have any. Proceed to the report from the Air Pollution Control Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. I just wanted to announce a few staffing changes in our engineering and compliance division. In engineering, Sam Kim, who has presented before you in the past, took a new position in Southern California in the end of July. Sam worked at Umbart for almost 9 years as an engineer. His positive, friendly personality is already missed, but we're excited for him because he's continuing his career journey. We held an internal recruitment for that open engineer position. We're happy to say that Tyler Patel, is Tyler here today?
No.
Who is an inspector, has been promoted to the position of engineer one. So we're really, I think this is perfect fit for him and the agency. He has an engineering degree. So we're really looking forward to him to working with us in the engineering program. And we'll start working on backfilling his position in compliance. Speaking of compliance, we have yet another inspector who will be leaving us, and that's Sandy Hartunian. She'll be retiring at the end of October after nearly 36 years with the agency. She'll also be greatly missed, and we expect to see her on the golf course making holes in one. She's an avid golfer. So as I said, we'll be doing open recruitments for two inspectors and an air quality technician position in engineering. If you know of anybody who may be interested, it'll be posted on our website. Also, I mentioned in previous meetings that we had a case with the district attorney, and I think the district attorney will be here today, but we had a really nice settlement, and this case went statewide. So our district attorney helped facilitate prosecution of a Canterbury Woods Senior Living Facility that was located in Pacific Grove, operated and owned by Front Porch Communities and Services. They operated in other communities throughout California, and our DA prosecuted along with the other DAs from those jurisdictions and settled for a total of $1.125 million. We'll receive $150,000 in civil penalties, $45,000 in cost recovery, and $132,500 to fund college-level science course in the Monterey Bay area to educate students about air pollution and air quality management. Also, I noted previously that we had an unresolved case. A gas station owner in Marina has not paid his permit to operate fees for over 2 years. We had to go through an abatement order process with our hearing board. That was the first time we've ever done that in the time I've been here, or in essence, the agency's beginning 50 years ago. So We ended up hiring a private attorney to help prosecute the case. In the meantime, the individual went bankrupt. So we're trying to get a stipulated judgment against the former owner operator, and indications are that we should get a penalty amount with some cost recovery to pay for our legal services that are out of pocket at this point. But I'm not holding my breath on that. You know, the fact that he's bankrupt doesn't mean he doesn't have any money. So we'll see what happens. Odor complaints. We received an odor complaint from a marina resident in July. No specific source of the odor was identified, although we know there are several potential sources out there. We did in Hollister start receiving odor complaints on July 23rd. A San Benito Foods tomato canning season begins in Hollister in July. Inspector Sandy Hartunian investigated the complaints and went to Hollister 7 times on the following dates, basically 23rd of July through the August 13th. She was not able to identify strong odors at the industrial wastewater treatment plant. Many of the complaints identified strongest odors occurring overnight. So we coordinated with the Sunny Slope County Water District, and they were looking at several manhole covers and looking up for backwater, backed up stormwater lines. And there was a backup in one vicinity. So those lines were cleared, and hopefully we'll see an end to those complaints that we've been receiving. In planning and air monitoring, just to let you know, our landscape equipment exchange program, LEAP, and the wood stove changeout program are moving along, and we continue to advertise them on Spanish and English radio stations, KSBW, online ads, newspapers and magazines, and social media sites. The Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program, which provides residents with incentive to purchase or lease new and used all-electric or plug-in electric vehicles, so far has received 33 applications with $41,000 obligated out of a $400,000 budgeted for the program. And that started July 1st. Now, the comparison is we have a little bit of a less incentive than we did the previous year. Last year at this time, we were almost done with all our funds. So we're not sure why it's not moving as fast. Perhaps there's saturation. Perhaps people are not purchasing electric vehicles. We don't have that data at this point, but the good news is we do have money to pass out. So we'll continue to report back on that status. And then MBARD planning staff coordinated with the Air Resources Board to provide an outreach table at a CARB one-stop truck event on Tuesday, August 20th from 9 to 1:30 at the General Stillwell Community Center in Seaside. The event will bring together MBARD, CARB, and other state departments at one location to assist owners of on-road heavy and medium-duty vehicles with information about regulations and incentives available to replace their vehicles or their equipment. Planning Division staff will provide a presentation, and we'll be discussing MBARD's on-road incentive programs. I guess I was yesterday, so I should change my tense there. They'll also let folks know about all our other grant programs that are available to reduce emissions from those types of vehicles. Outreach, San Juan Batista Mission Village Voice monthly newspaper, Vice Chair Kozmicki and I sat down with the reporter, and we got a really great story in the paper. There are copies out there. She went through the history of MBARD and what we do, and it was very, very good press to get. So we're really pleased with that. In addition, I was believe yesterday or the day before, I sat down with KSQD, K-Squid in Santa Cruz, and was interviewed on KSQD's Exploring Monterey Bay program. And we talked about MBARD, much similar to what was discussed in the newspaper article. And of course, in both instances, we let folks know about our 50th anniversary today. So I don't know if we're gonna have a general, you know, conflagration of people showing up here, but probably not. Lastly, I'm really proud to announce that an author that I helped co-author was published in a prestigious scientific journal. It's Environmental Research Letters. And the title of the article is Disproportionate Clean Air Act Violations Occur in Communities of Color Throughout the United States. So I'm actually going on the road. I will be giving a presentation on this in Virginia at the beginning of October. But it's really nice to be able to see. I worked with an attorney from George Washington University, who was the lead author, and went through all the databases that EPA has with respect to compliance and violations. And we're able to demonstrate that communities of color have a lot more violations relative to the Clean Air Act, as well as they don't see a lot of inspections. So even though they have more violations, they don't really have the inspectors going out as much either. So a very interesting article. I do have copies available. They're not signed, but I could sign them, I suppose, if you would like that. That concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Somebody who wishes to make comments. Supervisor,
just on that business, on your report that owed, I think for a couple of years, not paying and going bankrupt. How much was owed, and then how much did we end up spending on attorney's fees to collect that?
Good question. So I'll just approximate it. Essentially, he owed us in back fees and penalties approximately under $10,000. However, we pretty much, if we wanted to write him a ticket for all the violations, it would be in the millions, because it's $10,000 per day per violation. So we have, you know, over 700 days at probably $30,000 a day. In addition, he violated the abatement order of our hearings board, which carries a $25,000 per day violation cost. You know, at this point, we're just asking for $25,000. I shouldn't say too much, but and we want to cover our costs for legal costs. And the legal costs you ask about, at this point, we're into it for about $7,000.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just real quick on the Hollister, the cannery issue. Obviously, you're aware this is a repetitive sort of an annual situation that goes on over there. And just hoping that, you know, I can certainly start to make more communications, but it really does have a pretty drastic impact on the west side of Hollister, the, you know, talking about communities of color and area that's hit the hardest, is the lowest socioeconomic area in our community. And it's been troubling for quite a while. So I'm hoping that we can get a handle on it, a little firmer handle on it going forward, so that it's not just this intermittent issue that, you know, MBART has to address from year to year, because I know the neighbors there and I represent that neighborhood. It's a really, really big deal over there. It really is.
We'll try to do more in the ways of being proactive and getting them to be proactive. I think there is a difference this year that we were able to detect specifically cause and effect at the canning operation.
Yeah.
It may have been downstream, though, where the sewer had plugged up as a result of their effluent. We don't know. So that sort of gets out of our area of expertise. And, you know, as many of you know, sewers are very complicated. They're very difficult to sort of run down odors from those things. But we're aware of it. We'll be talking with the city, and I'll make sure we follow up, and I'll keep you in the loop.
Appreciate that. And then just real brief, the EV incentive program. Just wondering, you know, I'm assuming we can be fluid with this as far as the dollar amounts and things like that as the year goes along, just to make sure that we are just staying on top of that. I would hope that we're just showing a willingness to adjust as the year goes along to find a way to get those dollars out.
Yes.
Thank you.
Right. Seeing no others, we'll go out to the public, see if there's any public input on this item.
No one online, nothing received, and no one in the room.
With that, we'll close the item. Thank you, Mr. Stedman, for the report. And we'll go ahead and jump to our consent agenda, which consists of items 8 through 7. If they're a member of this body, we'll remove an item from our consent agenda. We'll go out to the public, see if there's any members of the public who wish to pull an item from consent.
No hands raised online, nothing received.
Got a motion for consent. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Brown.
Thank you.
And with that, we don't have anybody via Zoom, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. And we'll skip to item 14 to hold a public hearing and adopt resolution approving revisions to Rule 218, Title 5, Federal Operating Permits. Mary, we'll give you the floor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please speak into the mic. This one, it's on. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Mary Girado. I'm the engineering supervisor here at MBAR. And today I'm here to give you a presentation on our proposed amendments to Rule 218, which is our Title V Federal Operating Permits Regulation. The amendments that are being proposed today are required by EPA to ensure that we continue to have a conforming Title V program here at the district. Yeah, where you got? Where you got the point? I'm gonna go down.
Here we go.
There it goes. That went too fast. Okay. So in today's presentation, I will give you an overview, a basic understanding of the Title V program. I will address the recent Clean Air Act revisions, and then we'll get into the details of our proposed changes as a result of these three Clean Air Act revisions. And then lastly, I'll address any public comments that we received. So Title V is a section in the Federal Clean Air Act that regulates air emissions from stationary sources. Title V requires that major sources and other types of categories of sources obtain and comply with a federal operating permit. Those requirements are codified in 40 CFR Part 70 for local permitting agencies like ourselves. And our program was fully delegated by EPA in November of 2001. And that EPA approved program is contained in our Rule 218. I think it's important to note here that Title V permits are not construction permits, and they do not impose any additional requirements on the source. Instead, the purpose is to take all of the conditions that are on their local district permits and to consolidate them all onto one federal permit. So the last time we revised Rule 218 was in 2010, and that was to add EPA's greenhouse gas tailoring rule provisions. These provisions established a Title V major source permitting threshold for greenhouse gases at 100,000 tons per year. In 2015, though, EPA had to rescind a portion of that tailoring rule. And that was because the Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that the Clean Air Act conception of major source did not include greenhouse gas emissions. And so as a result, there was a two-pronged decision. First off, they said greenhouse gases alone cannot make a facility a major source. But if a facility is in for some other requirement, let's say they emit 100 tons per year of oxides and nitrogen, and they emit more than 100,000 tons of greenhouse gases, then that regulatory agency can include those emission units in their Title V permit. In October 2016, EPA also finalized revisions to modernize their public notice rule provisions to allow for electronic noticing instead of newspaper noticing. And this is kind of a natural evolution given the fact that the Title V rules were written the early 1990s. That was the pre-electronic media age. And as well as the fact that they have demonstrated that electronic noticing is a much more effective method to provide widespread public information on our permitting decisions. Then most recently, in July of 2023, EPA finalized the removal of what are called emergency affirmative defense provisions. And they removed these from all of their Clean Air Act programs. Basically, what these provisions would allow is that if a facility was in non-compliance with a technology-based emission limit, and the excess emissions were a result of an emergency from an unforeseeable event, then they could avoid liability. Well, in 2014, the DC Circuit Court felt that they concluded that EPA had exceeded its statutory authority. And in fact, they felt that it actually prohibited their ability to determine the appropriate penalties in a private civil suit. So as a result, EPA has notified the local permitting authorities and states that we must remove these emergency affirmative defense provisions from our rules. So to address these three revisions to the Clean Air Act, again, we're proposing to modify Rule 218 as follows. First off, to address the Supreme Court decisions on greenhouse gases, we're going to revise the definition of major source to remove sources that emit 100,000 tons per year or more of carbon dioxide equivalent greenhouse gas emissions. And then we're going to add EPA's new definition of subject to regulation, which puts into place that allowance with the Supreme Court that says greenhouse gases are only subject to the regulation if the facility is a major source and the facility emits more than 100,000 tons per year of greenhouse CO2 equivalent. Since the definition of subject to regulation already has the definition of CO2 equivalent and greenhouse gases, we're removing that from the rule. And we are revising and removing greenhouse gases from our exemption in section 1.3.2 to be consistent with the ruling. It's important to note here as well that this will not have an effect on any of the 15 permitted Title V sources here at MBARD, and that's because okay. Our district does have the tools in place to implement the modernized public noticing requirements. So we are proposing to remove the mandatory requirement that you provide notice in one newspaper for one day, and instead replace it with the more flexible option to, again, you can continue to public notice in the newspaper for one day, or what we would prefer is to post the notice for the entire 30 days on our website and email the notices to interested parties who are on our MBARD lists. And again, to make sure we conform with EPA's operating program, we have proposed to remove the emergency provisions in 4.215. And since it's no longer necessary, remove the definition of emergency as well. Since the rule is opened, we wanted to do some cleanup and remove the definition of district and replace it with the definition and reference of the acronym of MBARD. We updated the formatting from WordPerfect to Word. And then probably most importantly, we did receive EPA's comments on August 8th. Staff did address those comments, and they are already incorporated into the rule proposed before you. So besides the issues that we already discussed today, the remaining comments were more administrative in nature and don't have an impact on the implementation of the program. So the advisory committee did meet on August 1st. Although there was no quorum, the members who were there did not provide any comments or suggestions to change the rule. The public comment period ended August 2nd, and again, we did not receive any comments. And as I mentioned on the last slide, again, we did receive comments from EPA. Those comments were all addressed as well in the staff report and are reflected in the rule proposed for adoption. Accordingly, staff is recommending that the board adopt the resolution approving revisions to Rule 218. I could take any questions if you have any.
Questions from the board? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go to the public, see if there's any public input.
No hands raised online, no one in the room, and nothing received.
At legal, this is listed as a hearing, so I'm going to officially open the public hearing. Do we have to do that like we do with board?
Yeah, I think you effectively already did open the public hearing. But you could go ahead and close it once.
Now we'll close. All right. With that, we'll bring it back. Is there a desired action from this? Move adoption of the resolution.
Move.
All right, we've got a motion from Alejo, a second from Carbone. Any additional conversation?
I just want to say thank you for the very clear presentation and staff report and resolution. It helped me understand, as if I already didn't, the complexity of the work that you all do to try to make sure that we are following the rules and doing effective air monitoring and abatement and all of the things. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take this opportunity to clear up the fact that the advisory committee did meet, but we didn't really meet because we didn't have a quorum, which brings me back to, it's not in a separate item, but just a reminder to those that have not appointed representatives to the advisory committee, we have not had a quorum the last two meetings. So we're definitely in need of representation. Thank you. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we'll email you and let you know.
And I will. That may fit in on the medical side.
That's the hearings board. So we have two boards. We have the advisory, and maybe I misspoke, advisory committee, and then we have the hearings board. You just, through the consent agenda, placed a former employee of the district on the hearings board. And we need another, we could use another member of the hearings board, a professional, medical professional. And the advisory committee, each board member has the ability to appoint two. They don't have to be from your district or anything, just two people from the jurisdiction.
Is it
relative?
We could just get a
notice. Can you turn on your microphone?
In addition to the vacancies that are listed, if there are people that we have appointed that are consistently not present, if we could know that as well, so we can follow up with that.
Thank we'll you.
Do. Right. Okay. Up here. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody mm-hmm. opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Motion carries. Thank you very much. That we're going to jump to authorizing the air pollution control officer to implement a zero emission school bus program utilizing $2 million in AB 923 funds. I see Stedman listed here, but we've got someone else at this podium.
Yes, Eddie Bellerin, our staff planner, will be giving the presentation today.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Edward Balleron, and I will be presenting on the Zero Emission School Bus Program for the fiscal year of 2024-25. 25 million children ride school buses every day, and because of this, children are exposed to a number of different toxic compounds, including carbon dioxide, nitrogen oxides, VOCs, particulate matter, and air toxics, just to name a few. And so children are more susceptible to these sorts of things because their lungs are not fully developed and they have faster breathing rates. And so the primary goal of the Zero Emission School Bus Program is to reduce children's exposure to both cancer-causing and smog-forming pollution. So the Zero Emission School Bus Program primarily stems from AB 923, which was passed in 2004 and did two things. It increased the motor vehicle, the DMV registration fee by $2, which is what the district collects, and also funds projects in different clean air categories. Now, an example of clean air categories is the LESBE program, which focused funds on the replacement of old diesel school buses with modern diesel models, and also added the option of replacing particulate filters on old diesel engines. In 2015, CARB issued mail out 15-19, which established guidelines for electric bus fleet expansion and essentially started the zero emission school bus program. So as of 2024, the MBARD zero emission school bus program has delivered 12 buses and utilized over $2.5 million in AB 923 funds. Now, AB 923 funds have a couple different funding advantages, including the fact that they are local funds, so which that gives them more flexibility in both usage and reporting. And these are fleet expansion projects, meaning we do not have to destroy a bus to complete a project. Currently, $2 million have been budgeted for the fiscal year of 2024-25, and so we expect around 6 to 7 projects. Of course, that will depend on a few different things, including the bus types that are requested, as well as if grantees leverage any other funding sources. Now, as I mentioned, the program requirements were established in CARB Mailout 15-19, and some of those requirements include applicant eligibility, gross vehicle weight rating limits, project life, eligible costs, and the requirement that all buses funded through AB 923 funds are CHP certified. Now, to be eligible for the program, applicants must be one of four things. The first being a public school district, a county office of education, joint power authority, or a public charter school. Applicants must also either own their own buses or contract with an entity that owns their own buses, and of course must be able to follow program guidelines as well as any sort of contract requirements. Now, once determined to be eligible, applicants can receive up to $400,000 for an electric school bus as well as $20,000 for a charger. And so the great thing about AB 923 funds is we can fund one charger for every school bus that we deliver. And to save funds, we will encourage applicants to leverage other funding sources, including HVIP. So HVIP is a state program which can cover anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000, or about half the cost of a bus, and with AB 923 funds covering the remainder of that cost. Applicants will be able to access the application page through the MBARD webpage through our LaserFiche platform, and these will be processed on a first-come, first-served basis. Now, the great thing about the LaserFiche platform is it's an online platform, which means it's easy to access online. There's clear instructions and also a smooth workflow for applicants to follow, and provides an easy way for applicants to both manage and upload documents. And so we're trying something new this year. LaserFiche has the ability to generate grant agreements automatically. And so we will be able to send grant agreements to applicants after staff review. As I mentioned, these grant agreements, there's a couple contract details that will be in there, grantee information, funding sources, a bunch of different grantee obligations, as well as vehicle information, including quotes, and also the important part, which is a reporting for 5 years. So applicants, grantees will have to report annually for a 5-year project life. These grant agreements will be considered fully executed when they've been signed by both the grantee representative as well as the MBARD APCO. And then finally, here's a few examples of buses that we've already delivered. The first bus is a Lion Electric Type D, which is around $500,000. BYD has a Type A bus, which is $320,000. As well as the Bluebird Type C, which is closer to $400,000. So all these buses are ready to go and eligible for funding through AB 923 funds through the Zero Emission School Bus Program. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear them.
So. $2 million sounds like a lot of money, but according to your memo, so I would fund about 4 buses because it includes the $20,000 for infrastructure.
Correct. Yeah, 6 to 7 buses. You'd say that will depend on the buses. The buses that are ordered, just because there's a huge difference in the cost for a bus. Like a Type A is less expensive than like a huge Type B.
Got it. Any priority for districts? Is it just everybody apply and then how do you rank them about what school districts may be more needing it than others that perhaps purchased already electric buses?
So it's on a first come, first serve basis. So we there's no really ranking process. However, we will be doing outreach to specific school districts, county offices of education. If there's any school districts that you'd like us to go after, we certainly could do that.
Chris would say South County, I say Salinas.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was going to say,
let's do it.
Just exclude that, but Felipe just showed up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great.
Thank you. This sounds like a great program. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rich? Yeah, I should remark that we have tried to work with Salinas, and we've reached out to them, and they were, dedicated to getting a couple school buses, and then they had a huge change in staffing, and they let it go by the wayside. We've called them. We've tried to pound their door, and there's no interest at this time. There's also, I think, some union issues that they see these buses as perhaps taking away jobs because they require so much less maintenance. So that's one of the things that's come back to us as well. We're not sure if that's really an issue or not, but we would hate to see that happen because it's so beneficial.
That's the Salinas Senior High School District or Salinas Elementary or Alisa?
Salinas High School District, yeah.
Oh, sure. I've seen a few of these on the ground. I know South County's been an early adopter, as we typically are in the EV space. Bradley has one, and so does the community, the San Antonio Valley School District. And theirs is beautiful, and the school's very proud to have it. Their challenge was they didn't have a driver. Luckily, in the last week, they announced they now have two drivers, where they went from zero to two. So hopefully we can fire them up with another one. I hope they'll apply in this go-round. A question about the units themselves. How long is the wait time? I know with a lot of these, it's been years in terms of being in the pipeline waiting for a unit. What does that look like today? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, so Lion, I've seen Lion's probably will be the quickest of them. I believe they have buses available now. A to Z, which does the Bluebirds, about a year to a year and a half. So it will be a wait. I would say the limiting factor for some of these projects is the charger. Just because of the planning that it takes. Oftentimes, a lot of these school districts will want to put in a number of different chargers. Of course, that would take a long time to do that.
And what's the range on the different units?
Oh, I think 400 miles, something like that.
They're all about the same?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah.
And is there an opportunity to purchase secondhand units? I'll share. I know several of the mountainous counties that were early adopters have chosen not to stick with them, given the challenges around temperature, weather, hills, and so as they look to unload theirs, would somebody be able to step in and grab a secondhand one of this grant program?
I'll have to look at the AB 923 guidelines, but it might be allowed.
Any other questions?
Maybe I missed it, but the dates opening and closing of the program again to get that up?
So I've never mentioned a date, but we plan to do it early September.
Oh, and that'll be on the website?
Correct, yeah, absolutely. That application will all be built out through the LaserFISH form.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
All right, seeing nobody else at this point, I'll take this out to the public, see if there's any public input on item 15.
No hands raised online, nothing received, and no one here in the room.
Is there a second?
It's only in one meeting a year from left.
Got them all. Look at that. Is there a second?
I'll second if no one second.
Who seconded?
Go ahead and send it down to Santa Cruz.
Okay.
The love there. So with that, I do have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? The motion carries. With that, we've arrived at adjournment. Thank you all very much. Stick around. The party starts soon, right, Rich?
That's right. So we've got some activities.